The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
In coming to the Portable Media Expo and Podcasting Conference, we knew we'd see a lot of crap, but we had no idea we'd run into crap, and we just did. A crap monkey, as a matter of fact. And he's from Seattle as well. You may have seen the crap monkey running down the street. Very, very noticeable, as it were. Is that correct, Travis?
Yeah, that's me. We try to be a little bit noticeable, and sometimes it pays off.
What the hell does crap monkey mean?
It means nothing other than... It stuck one year. A friend of ours came to a Halloween costume as a crap monkey, and we decided let's make a website around it, and we'll figure out what to do with it later.
But what is a crap monkey?
It's a podcast. It's my podcast from Seattle. The topics are supposed to be movies, music, technology, beer, and Seattle, which is a pretty wide range, and often I get off topic of those too.
Beer in Seattle? Are you talking about microbrews?
Yeah, microbrews, craft brews. My wife works at Pyramid, so I kind of have a slant on the Pyramid. But I just, as you can tell from my physique, I have an interest in beer. And so I talk about it quite a bit.
But that's just one of the hats you wear. For your day job, you're at Microsoft.
That's correct. I work at Microsoft Studios doing production on behalf of Microsoft.
You only do stuff for Microsoft?
Yeah, pretty much. Microsoft and Microsoft partners, our charter is to support the video production needs for Microsoft and the folks we are involved with that need our support.
Now, are you wearing your crap hat or your Microsoft hat at this conference?
I'm actually wearing three hats. I've got my crap monkey hat on, my Microsoft hat on, and I also manage the Seattle Podcasters meetup group in Seattle. So I've got that hat on as well. So just kind of seeing what's going on in the scene. There's a lot of interesting folks out and having a good time.
I haven't had a chance to come to a Seattle podcaster meetup. How many people come there on average?
On average, we get between 8 and 15. So we actually are about 55 members strong, and we don't always get the exact same 8 or 15 people. So we're kind of getting a mix. But part of it is we haven't really driven a powerful agenda into the meetings. We're just kind of sharing tips and tricks and having a couple beers, which has been fun. But starting next year, we're going to start to drive a few more interesting topics into the mix and some speakers and some really reasons to bring people out. So probably January 10th is the date we're trying to start that, and there'll be more information coming on the Seattle Meetup site.
Have you been happy with Meetup since the subscription changes a few months ago?
No. It's a little bit the drug dealer philosophy where we had, you know, it was free and people were coming there, but $19 is steep, in my opinion, for what that offers. So right now, we had a corresponding site that was seattlepodcasting.net, and it was kind of old web. It didn't take advantage of any blog or wiki or any of that stuff. So right now, we're in the process of building a blog/wiki based site. I really don't want to say Web 2.0, but that's what everyone's talking about these days. And so we're building that now. If you go there now, there's no content, but at least not that old stable website. And if we can get enough momentum around that, hopefully we can dump off a meetup altogether.
In your work with Microsoft as a member of the production team, what are you specifically tasked with on a regular basis?
I specifically am... official title is Digital Media Solutions Manager. So I manage a team that handles traditional broadcast, digital media compression, encoding of pretty much every format you can think of, as well as general production, tape-based production. So I manage a team that's about six folks that have that as their main goals, which is a pretty big, vast area because it's not all studio-based either. There's a lot of going on the road and doing big events and trying to capture media out on remote locations.
Who is Pete Grondel?
That's what everyone wants to know, isn't it? Who is Pete Grondel? Pete Grondel is the evangelist of the century. No, he is. He's on my team, and he is as passionate about digital media as anyone I've ever met. And so, anyone I do meet usually says, "Who is Pete Grondel?" Because they've run into him in some fashion. He pretty much is at every show he can be at, and he's usually got a fisheye lens camera about 2 inches from your nose, and he is archiving the world as it happens, more or less. And he's a real passionate guy and an awesome guy to work with.
You obviously get podcasting. What about the rest of your team?
The rest of my team gets podcasting. Podcasting is just, it means a lot to a lot of different people. So if you were to walk around a large Redmond company, you'll probably get a different idea of what podcasting is about depending on who you talk to. And we're a big organization, and a lot of people get it the same way I get it, and other people have different views on it. And I'm not afraid personally of the word podcasting. I personally use an iRiver, and I use FeedDemon, and I aggregate through Windows Media Player. But I'm listening to podcasts, and I'm not afraid to walk around saying that there's a podcast on my device. And today it's Adam Curry, and tomorrow it's the DVD Weekly.
And of course, when you say large organization, you're referring to Microsoft, not the Crap Monkey crew.
Well, you know, they're about equal in size. Crap Monkey's benefits aren't as good. But, yeah, I'm referring to Microsoft. And there's a lot of people get it. It's just everyone kind of has a different, you know, bend on what it exactly is and what it means to the industry.
You serve Microsoft divisions inside of Microsoft at Microsoft Studios. Has any one of them approached you and asked you to help them develop a podcast?
Absolutely. And we've actually, and this is where a lot of people have come into contact with Pete Grondahl, we have kind of taken different kinds of slants. We've done traditional podcasts, which are, an MP3-based podcast. We've done remote podcasts at, like, TechEd. We did what we called kind of a podcast style approach. It was RSS subscription to media. Of course, that media came as video files, because we were really trying to show people what was happening at the event and really let people who couldn't come to the event see what it was like to be out on the show floor. So over the course of about a week of Tech Ed, we sent about 70 videos across this feed that were really guerrilla-style cameras running around the floor and getting in people's faces. So we've done that at a few events. And there's also some folks coming in now saying, you know what, we just want to talk to our users on a regular basis, and we're starting to help them put together, podcasts, really. And then the interesting thing is we're kind of a production facility. And in podcasting, you really don't need us. So part of what we're doing is saying, hey, if you really want to talk to your community and your user base and you want a podcast and you want to let them subscribe, here's how to do it and here are some tools. But you don't need the big, giant production facility to really do that.
You brought up a word. I think it's an important word. Video. Podcasting is traditional audio, and people are messing around with video a little bit. But then, of course, the new iPod came out. And suddenly, folks have a 30 to 60 gigabyte drive in their pocket that they've got videos on. Microsoft has kind of missed the audio, revolution in terms of the whole podcast thing. What about video? Are you anywhere near providing a solution for consumers on any front? But now seeing that Apple has done the video and the audio, what's happening?
There's things in the mix. I'm not the right person to speak to the strategy on the top level, because I'm more down in the realm of creating content, encoding content. And so I can say there's things in the mix. And I don't want to say even that we missed the audio revolution. There's obviously a ton of devices on the market. I'm carrying my iRiver around today. We missed perhaps the big Uber word that is iPod and the generation of, the buzz it has created, I suppose. But there's, when I'm sitting on the bus, granted I'm on a bus going to Redmond, there's plenty of non-iPod devices as well. Again, I'm more in the production environment and not really the best person to speak to the Uber strategies and where we're going with video on the portable devices.
Where do you want to go?
Where do I want to go? That's a good question. I was never a device head until the birth of podcasting. I went out and bought an iRiver the day I heard my first podcast because I don't care to carry music around with me. It's just not what I do. Video, I haven't decided yet if I want to carry that with me. I might want to be able to capture it on the fly. And I guess I want the ability to watch what I want to watch. But it might be on my laptop, it might be on my PC or my home computer. If it's in my pocket while I sit on the bus, the jury's still out on that one.
Once you start, you can't stop.
That's what I'm told. And, you know, I didn't know that I'd ever go down the road of audio on a device. So I'll get there. Video was my passion way before audio. So here I am running around with a bunch of audio heads now, and I think video is probably going to get there. But it's a lot more work. I wake up in the morning and I do a podcast, and I do it in real time. I don't listen to it. I don't edit it. I just upload it. And video is going to be harder to do that and keep an audience.
All right. Well, thanks for giving us your crap.
Hey, you bet. Anytime you need some crap, come see the Crap Monkey at crapmonkey.com.
If a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear it? If your name is mentioned in a television broadcast, did you know it happened? One company set out to try to fix that problem, TV Eyes, tveyes.com. It's been around for quite a while, and they've also got a new product called Podscope. And we're lucky enough to be with one of the people who is within the company. David, is it Ives?
Ives, yep.
And what's your role?
I'm the CEO and founder of TV Eyes.
No, you're not. They don't bring the CEOs to shows like this. I don't believe it.
This is too much fun. That's why I'm here, to talk to people who are actually out creating these podcasts and people who want to find them.
So how long has TV Eyes been doing its thing?
For about 7 years, we've been watching real-time television and radio and making that searchable through an internet browser. We're currently watching 135 channels in 7 countries. And when podcasting came along, we thought, great, we'll apply our technology to this consumer-generated media.
So that's a separate product.
Yes, Podscope is an ad-supported product that we launched in April. Podscope.com, you can go and search for any keyword, just as you would with a Yahoo or Google site, and we'll actually play an audio snippet containing your keyword.
And you now syndicate your results in RSS.
Exactly, yeah. So we've had a lot of people who've been asking for a while now for the ability to set up a subscription to keywords and phrases, and so we just added that in the last couple of weeks.
How difficult was that for you to do?
It really wasn't difficult. It was just one of those priority items that had to get moved up into the top 10 so that it got done.
So we're glad to see that it got done. What are you adding to the whole sphere of podcasting, you feel, that is separate from everybody else?
Well, we're strong believers that metadata alone doesn't cut it for audio and video. And as we're seeing now with Google Print and Yahoo, you have to actually index all of the content within a file. So our distinct and unique capability is the fact that we crack open that audio file and let you search within it and find just those relevant mentions that you're looking for.
So do you create bookmarks of sorts within audio files, indications of where certain sentences or words are actually stated?
Well, part of our technology in voice recognition is that we actually know down to the millisecond when every word is spoken in an audio file. So that's how we're able to come back and play a snippet just containing what you care about.
But let's say it's a voice like mine, and I don't exactly have perfect diction. So how well would it do if someone wasn't as clear-spoken as they could be?
Well, it is completely speaker-independent. So we are able to pick up any voice, male, female, any age. Accuracy rates do vary. If there's background noise like music or like this conference hall has a lot of background noise, it will affect the quality, but in general it's about 70 to 80% accurate.
And are those results then just a mirror of what's out there, or do you read into the files? So what I'm saying is, do you copy the audio and then store it on your own servers, or do you just read what's out there?
Yes, we actually harvest the audio and create a flash copy of it so that we can play back these snippets. And we only allow about a 10-second snippet per mention. But if you want the whole file, we send you back to the content producer site and then you download it from there.
Have you had any pushback from publishers by you doing this?
No, we haven't. In fact, we're seen as a distribution medium for podcasters, and it's an issue that could arise, but it has not been discussed to date.
TV Eyes has got a completely different business model, correct?
Yes, TV Eyes has a professional product that's sold on a subscription basis We have Fortune 1000 companies, government agencies who need to know what's being said about their products, their competitors around the world in real time.
Any good success stories with that?
Well, yes, we have a lot of companies that you've heard of that, use us on a daily basis to keep track of what's being said in the UK, France, Australia.
Oh, so you're multilingual?
Yes, we work in over a dozen languages.
Swahili?
Not that one yet.
Man, you're missing out on a big market there, I'm telling you. We got a lot of Swahili lists. They don't know what we're saying, but we got a lot of them.
Well, we'll put that in the queue. I don't know if it'll get top 10 just right away. But
I can't imagine it would. Any new features we could look forward to from PodScope?
We're working on providing some larger video playback so you get a better experience when you're previewing the video. And there are a number of features that we really aren't ready to talk about, but in the next few weeks you'll see some exciting new capabilities.
Oh, this microphone isn't on. I'm just going through the motions here. You can tell me everything, really.
Yeah, I trust you, Chris, but just it's a company policy.
That's your problem, that you trusted me in the first place. But, David, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for coming by, Chris.
We're here with the Audiboy, John Federico from Audible.com, and you might recognize his face or his name for his involvement with GnomeDex, both officially and unofficially, or, you know, personally and professionally. You came to the conference.
Yes, I did. Loved every minute.
And you brought the booth. And you brought the booth here.
And I brought the booth here, which we could be using if you'd like.
No. We like the ambience of the whole crowd moving around thing.
Well, it's trying to make things a little quieter for you.
I don't need that. I need noise in my life. But apparently you're telling me I need this WordCast thing, too?
You're a media kind of guy, Chris. So if you're looking to truly monetize, you know, your content as, you know, as efficiently as possible, I would say so, yeah.
Okay, so this is more for producers than it is consumers?
At the moment, yes. There are two ways, I guess, to enter the market of podcasting. You can focus primarily on the listener experience and maybe add other functionality for publishers, or you can focus on the other end. Start with the publishers. That's where we are. We're starting with the publishers.
With the WordCast service, you have a basic and you have a pro.
That's right.
What is the line that divides the two?
For those who aren't familiar with the Audible file format, it's something we created 10 years ago when none of this stuff existed. Originally, so basically it's very small. It has things, it's optimized for spoken word. So it has things like bookmarks, chapter marks, the ability to turn off the device and have it, you know, restart where you left off, and really quick downloads, etc. And so the difference between Media and Pro, between WordCast Basic and WordCast Pro is that Pro is protected content. It uses the existing Audible platform with our content protection technology. That content protection technology enables you to accurately measure reach and frequency. So not just downloads, but real listeners, real human beings who are downloading content. It also enables you to charge for the content. Because the content is protected, you can set a price for a subscription or on a per-episode basis. I could get the Chris Perillo show for $9.95 a month, or I can download a classic show for $1.95, let's say. And so that's pro. Basic, same file format, same tiny file size, same bookmarks, unprotected. Freely shareable, just like an MP3. Plays back on over 160 devices, including the iPod. It's the second most widely playable format. It's second only to MP3.
Really? So you're beating out Windows Media?
Yeah. You know, we play on... if the numbers are to be believed, and we think they are, Apple has 75% of the market. So, and we play on the iPod. We play on every iPod ever made, and then we also play on devices within the remaining 25%. Creative devices: Rio, Palm, Windows Media Player, Windows mobile devices. Excuse me. So, yeah, it definitely is has wider playback than the others.
So is the regular listener of the Audible service going to notice the difference between what they're getting now with traditional audiobooks and with casts that are pushed through your WordCast service?
No. The experience will be exactly the same. The audio quality will differ because, hey, anybody can publish, and so, you know, you're going to get what you get. But no, the listener experience will be exactly the same.
Now, what if I don't place any monetary value on my content? I mean, it's pretty generic, pretty run-of-the-mill. Is WordCast going to be for me?
WordCast Pro. Are you talking about giving your content away and having it ad supported, or you're saying that you just want to be a hobbyist and distribute to whomever wants to listen?
Well, let's start with the hobbyist, and then we can go into maybe an ad supported model.
For a hobbyist, WordCast Basic would probably be the best way to do that. It's relatively inexpensive. It's competitively priced. We have a what we might call a carrier grade infrastructure, so it's very reliable. And you get very small file sizes and the benefit of bookmarks and save state and playback on lots of different devices. That said, we're primarily target. If it's just a hobby, hey, MP3 might be good for you because you're just tooling around trying to see what it's about. So it may not work for you. You may want to go with MP3. But if you want to make money from your content, so you want to have it ad supported and freely distributed, both can work. But as a media person yourself, Chris, obviously that you have to deliver real numbers to your advertisers, particularly if you're selling on a CPM basis. WordCast Pro, you can give your content away for free. It just requires registration. So it's a central point of distribution. It can't be shared. That means anybody who wants it can get it. And we're just able to count human beings who have ears and can represent something real to your advertiser.
How does that ad model work? Is that something that I have to sell, or is that something that you sell for me, or a third-party network does?
You can sell it. You can have a third-party with a relationship. If you have your own third-party relationship, you can do that. In the next few weeks and months, we'll be announcing relationships with other third parties that will represent different market segments. And so some will focus more on technology, some will focus more on consumer products, etc. And we'll basically provide them with the tools to help sell your ads and insert them for you. We'll help make those relationships. We ourselves, though, will not be selling the advertising.
Through the WordCast Basic or the WordCast Pro service?
Either one. From an ad sales rep's perspective, they're going to want to have better numbers than not. So chances are they're going to rather work with WordCast Pro customers than WordCast Basic. But if someone's looking just to get rid of remnant space cheaply, and it's a WordCast Basic, less measurable file format, sure. I would imagine somebody would sell that.
And do you have any, partners lined up at launch, which hasn't happened yet?
No, it'll be in customers' hands by the end of the month. We tried and tried and tried to get it done for now, and the integration was just was a little more hellish than we expected. But it'll be in customers' hands by the end of the month. We do have partners lined up, of which I'd have to confirm if I'm allowed to talk about. I'm not sure, so since I'm not sure, I won't. But they are some major media companies as well as some emerging media companies. Some are household names, and some are becoming. So we're excited about that.
So would I be able to, the Audible service costs consumers money because you're buying audiobooks. Is it going to cost consumers money to get podcasts that are done, let's say, through WordCast Basic?
No, not at all. To the listener, it can always be free if the producer wants, or the producer can assign a price in WordCast Pro. So no, there will never be a charge per se that's required. It's completely up to the publisher, I guess, is really what it comes down to. I've said this a million times, but I'll say it one more time, for the microphone. Over the years, if you were a content provider, we did our best to get you to work with us. We took your content in whatever format it existed. We put it into our black box. We marketed it and sold the heck out of it. And at the end of a quarter, we'd pay you a royalty for it. In this model, we're going to open up the back of the black box. We're going to allow you to put your content into it. You're going to market it. We're going to help you sell it if you so desire. So it's totally up to the publisher whether or not it's for your paid.
But for the consumer, they get to reap the benefits whether it's free or paid.
Exactly.
Is it going to be the same software, or are we looking at a new software revision?
Nothing changes. It's the Audible file format. It always has been.
Well, in terms of the conduit of getting that.
In terms of receiving it, any standard podcatcher will work. So iTunes, iPod, you name it, any standard iPod will work.
What about branching into video?
We'd have to change the name of the company to Visible, I guess. But a lot of people have asked us that. I do not know of any plans to even investigate that, so I couldn't comment. I'm not the chief technologist. I'm just a podcasting guy.
That's your official title now?
No, not official, no.
You don't like Audiboy?
Sure, Chris. For you, you can call me Audiboy.
You just put on a cape, and be the superhero?
The big A in my chest, yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Green A, big green A.
Thank you. I'm just going to leave everybody with that mental picture.
Oh, great. Lovely.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Chris.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.